And I saw your post about Writing Off the Deep End. Mary, you probably should look at it. Marco is suggesting that he turn our video recordings into audio recordings, and he'll get them posted on iTunes and different places, Google and stuff like that.
I think they'd make good audio.
Grounded in infinite conversations or metapsychosis. So, yeah.
Wow. If you need help, if there's anything I can do to make that happen, I'll gladly.
Can help with that. Well, I mean, here's the thing is that people have a kind of a loose idea of what a podcast is. So any sort of interview style or any kind of, content like the kind that you guys created, as long as you put it on YouTube or anywhere else, it's a podcast. But technically, a podcast is a syndicated audio feed that like goes out to like these apps that people use to listen to podcasts, even though you don't really have to use those apps to listen to podcasts. And it's just kind of like part of, the tech industry's kind of, ecology. But people who listen to podcasts, quote unquote podcasts, usually do so via like their phone, their iTunes app, or their it's the podcast app, or I know Spotify has also become more popular platform, and then Google Play is the other one. So I thought, well, you have a podcast, but it's not really a podcast in that sense that people can listen to it like on their devices. So at one time, like a year ago, maybe a year and a half ago, we had started, and I think mainly with Jeffrey, I don't think you were in the loop on this, but posting those to the other site that hasn't really been developed much yet, cosmos.earth. It sort of petered out. It didn't really, I don't think we completed like the technical work on that. But now Bridget has had her podcast going on the Metapsychosis site for, I guess it's maybe 6 months, 8 months. And it's gotta be almost a year. It's the functionality is there, and it would be easy enough if you just had the video files to extract the audio and upload them. And then I'd connect it on the back end to like iTunes, Google, and Spotify. And if you would want to just create the individual episodes, then I could help coordinate getting a feed up, basically. And then that would be another whole stream of content for the site too. You could keep doing what you're already doing too, as far as just posting it to YouTube. If you don't have to change anything.
But I just want to getting it out by all these different means can only be good, I think. And I that there would be an audio only version, because I think that lots of people love to listen to podcasts while they do work and stuff like that, and it just seems. Even though you could just put YouTube on and not look at it, it feels more like there's a conceptual thing.
They do that with music a lot. They put YouTube that plays music up and they don't look at it. But
but there are some little hooks with that, because YouTube will not let you kind of close the app if you don't have a subscription to YouTube, if you're not paying for it, actually, like at least on iPhones. So if you open it, you're kind of stuck with the video, even if you're not watching it, and you can't like do other things. Whereas with the iTunes app or the podcast app, you could have it on in the background and
play when you're in another app.
Exactly. And that's just a minor, I guess, inconvenience, but people do it anyway, but I think it's definitely better to have the audio feed only. I think if you would like to do it and our game, let's do it.
I might have all the sound files already extracted, Jeffrey, because I work on them editing. But I'll get them all in one place. And if you tell me where to upload them, Marco, I will. Mm-hmm.
Sweet. Okay. All right. So I did start the recording, just for the record, this is Metapsychosis editorial meeting. I don't even know the date. It's July 20 something. I've lost track. 22nd.
Yeah.
And
July is going by in a flash.
It really is. But this is peak summer here. We're getting into the period where thunderstorms start coming in the afternoon, and we're going to start getting tornado warnings and other fun stuff like that. Anyhow, Bridget's not able to join us today. She's not feeling well. So it's the three of us. I didn't have an extensive agenda. Everything up to this point has been like the preparation for launching our call for submissions, and that's now live, and we have some submissions coming in. And I guess the logical next question would be like, so now how do we get the word out? And maybe even how do we target the people or the kind of writers that we most would want to submit, so that the quality of the submissions overall is higher. And there's some obvious means like the Twitter account and social media. And I'm starting to send the link to people I know who are writers or who would be like sharers of the link, maybe put it out to their own communities. But I haven't done any kind of social media. I haven't yet even sent it to the email list. I would love to talk about how we can, move the ball there, or get the ball rolling.
I did make a Facebook post and an Instagram post, because those are the things I'm on. So I thought that I would do another one. I mean, we have a 6-week period, so I'm going to do one more. I did it at the beginning. I think I'll do one at the 3-week mark and at the 1-week mark.
Mm-hmm.
So that those keep going up, but that will only reach my personal network. So,
and I put it up on my Twitter feed too, on my one, because you haven't given me access to the.
I just did actually before the meeting. There's a password sharing kind of module in the Cosmos Cloud, so I put it there, and shared access with you.
So I put it up there, and you saw I did it for, well, I did it at the Clarion West. I put up an announcement at the Clarion West write-a-thon site.
Mm-hmm.
And they suggested when they saw it, oh, you might think about putting into these submissions sites. So I did it for submissions. I can't remember what it's called now.
It's the Submissions Grinder, I think you did.
Submissions Grinder. The other one I'm still doing because it needed a bit more meta information. So
I just had a thought, which is that, this is again like something pretty local, but the Quebec Writers Federation, which I'm a member of, puts out a newsletter with calls for submissions. So I will let them know, and they could advertise for us.
Okay.
But are there other regional things, like other mailing lists like that?
I mean, I'm not averse to getting on Twitter myself and tweeting it, and also like some specific people who would possibly retweet it to their own followers, like maybe the Weird Studies guys, JF, maybe Jeremy Johnson. I should probably make a list of people to contact. They've just been coming to mind, but I haven't systematized what I'm doing. Maybe I shouldn't make a list. I should just contact them as they come to mind. But that has for me worked in the past, is in a way you just kind of seed it with the right people, and then their networks do all the work. I don't have too many connections with listing services or sites, Eduardo or Amilcar mentioned one, and I suggested he might want to add metapsychosis there. But nothing else like institutional like venues come to mind, just like social media things. There's another account that I'm on. It's a Mastodon account, which is like a open source Twitter alternative, but it's a pretty robust group of people. They're all social like cooperators. It's called Social Co-op, social.coop, and I can post it there as well. We might get some interesting things there. So, but I think maybe one of the best things would be to send it to our email list. I haven't done that yet.
Agreed.
Can you put it up on the Clarion site? Is there the Slack
site? I don't, how do you mean? Like the Clarion Workshop official website? I'm just a student. I'm not a coordinator.
No, but I mean, I put it up on the Clarion West side, and I looked around. There was an announcement page, and that's where they suggested I put it, so I did. So.
On the write-a-thon page, you mean? Or on the workshop page?
No, not the write-a-thon announcement. It was something. It was called something else. Hang on, let me look. It was called. It's here somewhere.
They have like a blog.
Okay, writing calls for subs or job opening.
Oh, cool. Okay. I don't know if Clarion's got one, but I can look into it.
And that's what I put it up on.
They have a Facebook page. Actually, maybe I should post to that, actually.
Yeah, I actually put it up first on another channel, and then they suggested that I put it up there, so I did, but you know, I asked whether it was okay to post it, and they said fine, you know, so.
Okay, cool.
Okay, that's a start, and this is the fun part, I think. For me, it's the fun part. I haven't moved into the mode yet where I'm not working on the thing and I'm just sharing it with other people and interacting. But in the past, it's been fun. And then really, submissions are going to come in. We're going to read them. We're going to comment on them. And then the next steps really would be I don't know if we would really do this until after the period, but begin committing to pieces. Right.
And I'd like to start soon, actually. I'd be ready to start discussing things if we had time. Mm-hmm. It obviously might get pushed out with other things, but I think it's nice to stay on the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything will be like getting in touch with the writers will be a process. Mm-hmm. If we ask for edits, it will be a process. So I'd be in favor of a kind of rolling discussion acceptance.
Mm.
If we had time, but if we've got so much work to do that it's better to focus on other stuff now, then I know it's a lower priority, but
I think we have time, actually. Okay. I don't know what else we have to do necessarily in these meetings now.
We're going to be meeting for is to talk about the cool poems and stuff that come in.
So. Yeah. I think that would be I'm sort of at a loss for what else. I don't really want to talk about promotion too much. I don't want to talk about the technology too much. I think that there's just, we can promote it however we can, you know, just with whatever networks that we're connected with that feel appropriate. And it seems like there's not that much overlap between mine and yours. Do have the metapsychosis specific stuff, like the Facebook page and the Twitter account, but that's fairly easy to do. And, that's more the fun part. because I don't let myself do social media.
No, I know.
It's such a slippery slope.
I have like a half hour kind of limit for myself on this. So,
But I never denigrate social media because I got some of my best tips for the writing world through social media. So I considered it to be gold, but not gold is, you know, rare. Mm-hmm. So gold isn't that often on Twitter, but when it hits, it's worth a lot, you know? So
it's definitely super useful and super powerful. And I just have a weak and addiction prone personality, which is why I have to be careful with it.
That's me too. So it will be an indulgence that you know,
you'll get to do it for fun. Fun and work.
Yeah, but I mean, as far as the editorial meeting and business, I mean, I think that once we start discussing pieces, then like it'll naturally like arise around like when we're going to schedule those based on how the discussions go with the authors. And like as pieces become finished, then we'll be able to start populating an editorial calendar. And
we still have to put up our blog, so we're going to have a schedule for putting them up.
I think mine's next week. Yours was this week, right? And then it's either me or you next, Jeffrey, because we're the only ones who've written ours. Oh, Bridget wrote hers too.
Bridget has. Right. And I haven't written mine yet, nor Eduardo. Gurmeet, who you guys haven't met yet, he said he's getting to it. So hopefully we'll meet him after that. So that would be three in the can. So whenever you want to start, really.
We only make it earlier in the campaign than later because they do make sense later because there will be other submission calls, but if it's to be effective for this submission call, they should need to go up fairly soon.
Have we got six? Let's just do one a week. That would be. Oh, But then the one in the last week, you're right. Like, as you say, Jeffrey, won't have much impact. We could do two a week.
I'm open either way. I would suggest we could start this weekend or this Friday and then maybe next Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, do you need a picture? Is it better to have like a photo with it?
I'd say that's optional for the blogs.
Okay.
And if you have one that you like, mm-hmm. we could do it. I've been thinking and talking with Kayla as well about changing the design a little bit on the site so that there isn't a huge image, mm-hmm. Which first of all, like screws up the proportions of the image. Because when you have a nice piece of art, it's good to be able to see the whole thing instead of just a cropped version of it. Maybe brings that into a kind of smaller space and puts the title up top. And then an image could be optional there. And then if you click the image, it could blow up and you could see it large if it's, you know, really worth looking at.
When you say an image, you don't mean a photo of us? You mean something else?
I think you were talking about an image for the post, kind of like there's an image for the announcement that went up.
I was kind of thinking that, not obligatory, but sometimes it isn't. If it's a blog about like introducing ourselves and who we are, and if you're comfortable putting a photo of yourself up, it could be kind of nice. I know Malahat Review does that for their interviews. There's usually a picture of the person being interviewed or whatever. But actually, the New Quarterly doesn't. I can think of folks who do it either way. So just a thought.
I'm comfortable with it. I think it would be nice. It'd be cool if we had drawings of ourselves or some kind of artistic
rendering. When I do my blog postings and I don't have an image already in my bank, I tend to go out and say, okay, I need to draw up a new one. I mean, literally draw it up. It slows down the posting process.
Well, I know that for you, Mary, we do need a bio and an image that we don't have at all. And okay. Look more as like a standard format. Every author has a mm-hmm. short bio. paragraph or so.
Like 100 words?
Yeah. And then a thumbnail image. Cool. But I thought you were referring to like the bigger image that sometimes goes with posts. And so that gives some leeway, because if you'd like a different kind of image that's not like a personal profile photo, your photo would still be there in the, you know, associated with the post.
No, I guess actually maybe what would be best is just like at the end of the blog post, maybe my bio appears or something like that. Do you see what I mean? Like when you scroll down to the bottom.
Yeah, that's how it works right now.
Perfect. Done. Then that's good. I think that's
okay. But we'll need that and an image. Yeah. And I will, after this, I'll send you a link where you could insert those, where you can create those.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's just like creating a post on the side and uploading an image, and it shouldn't be any problem.
Super.
But then again, there's always problems.
Yeah, I'll know where to go if I hit a problem.
Okay.
So, good.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe we should.
You want to talk submissions?
Well, let me ask you guys if you have any questions. Like technically, I could help answer those, but I'm not feeling it like urgently, like the need to speak about anything until we start talking about submissions. And
how many of the submissions do we have two reviewers already on? Because that was the idea, was before we would discuss it, we would have two reviewers. So we might want to look at how many have two reviewers and which ones only have one reviewer, and to figure out who the second reviewer might be.
So if you mean the newest ones, I have refrained from typing anything in yet a little bit, because I wanted to just be 100% sure how the system works, but I think that's fine now. But also I just wanted to like see a few come in before I started to get judgmental about them.
Well, I already started getting judgmental.
Oh yeah. I mean, of the three that came in, there was one that I quite liked and a couple that I didn't, but I wonder if we had the same ones. For the submission salvage ones, Jeffrey, you and I have pretty much covered almost all of them.
But there's not together. We've divided up half and half. Like, so.
But there's a handful that I've done that you haven't, and there's a handful that you've done that I haven't. And right. I scrolled through it and looked to see if there was any that you'd done that you really liked. And then I went and read that one. So I hadn't read Annie Blake yet. Okay. And you're right, she's amazing. So that was one on my list that I think it would be nice to get in touch with her and see if she's still.
You've worked with Annie Blake before, right, Marco?
We have, and Bridget has worked with her specifically. But either of you could get in touch with her for sure.
Okay, she sent us a chapbook. She didn't send a single
Yeah, it's more, it's like a whole book of poetry, not a single piece.
And she indicated she'd be interested that if, like a print, that it would, a print format would be interesting to her if we were interested in it. So it's about 30 pages of poetry.
Yeah.
And all quite good. Actually, okay. I haven't gotten quite to the end, but everything I've read so far has been pretty great.
Okay. I'd hadn't noticed that you filled in all of the reviewer cells on the spreadsheet.
Yeah, we put comments.
That's great. I feel like maybe I should look at the ones, maybe start going back here and look at the ones that you've either marked as excellent or good.
So I wrote down Annie Blake. Jeffrey thought was excellent. I only gave it one excellent for mine, and it was Patrick DiCarlo, who sent a handful of poems that were quite good.
See that one.
And the only other one that got two goods, now we're moving down from excellence, was Diana Thorson. And everything else, like sometimes either Jeffrey or I gave it a good and the other gave it needs work. Sometimes we both gave it needs work. None of us was quite bold enough or mean enough to block anything, although I was tempted.
I think I put comments down where I think maybe this one should be rejected, even though I said needs work.
Yeah. Well, like, and I'll be honest, like it's something that both of us said needs work, I think is ironically like not gonna get worked on. It needs work, but we're maybe not going to do it. So.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. Well, I'm going to catch up with this then. I mean, that'll be for me one, you know, the next thing is just to get my mind into editorial mode.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what August will be more about for me. July is a very active, has been a very active month. I've been really hustling and working hard, not just with metapsychosis, but around the house, yeah. A lot of personal stuff. But it feels like we're on the right track and feels like it's coming together. And I'm glad I got the submissions page up and something written. It was.
It's clearly working. Like, they're coming in. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a real thing.
Yeah. It's really nice. And then we'll get into the fall and we'll see how things go. I mean, I think my ideal is that, you know, we begin publishing with some frequency and really seeing like an audience grow. And then we use that kind of like as a stepping stone and we move into the print books. Yeah. Jeffries, and we each have books, and I know there's a few others. So, and then that to me would be a real fulfillment in a way, like really bringing something into concretion, mm-hmm. that has been like in the works. It's been like gestating for, mm-hmm. for all these years now.
Yeah.
And then with our writing group, I'm about to share a piece that I've been working on since about a good year's work, but a year in this specific piece, but then, you know, 3 or 4 years prior, just building up to this part of it. And then I have a vision for how the rest of it goes, and look forward to discussing that. But publishing all this other work is a way of preparing the ground for publishing my own work too. And it's so, it's exciting like that that's come together. Sometimes I don't believe it. And it definitely takes longer and it's harder than one anticipates at the beginning. I don't think you would set off on these kinds of things if you knew how much work is actually involved.
No, ignorance is the only thing that makes it possible.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if it comes out of necessity, you do it anyway because you have to, even though the workload is huge, right? So.
Well, that's the thing. Eventually, you can't avoid the work that you have to do. And I think the universe has a way of like sort of pushing you, if you don't do your work willingly, it'll kind of force you to face, you know, what you have to do one way or the other. At least, I don't know, that's been my experience of it. As much as I procrastinate, I can't avoid it in the end. And then when you finally face it and relax and fall into it, it becomes really blissful and really, really enjoyable. And like, why was I avoiding this the whole time? But that just bringing to fruition, I just don't want to die before it happens. That's all. I'm trying to stay healthy, trying to avoid accidents,
infection.
Yeah, because I feel like there's a certain like delivery, like once the work is in the world and it's sort of secured in the sense that it's in other people's hands, it's not on a hard drive somewhere that's gonna, you know, fail catastrophically. Like, then there's a certain amount of letting go that I feel is possible. Like that. Well,
that's the way I feel, but I've got 15 of them to get throughout.
Okay. Oh, Jeffrey. All right. Well, I'm glad we're helping each other out. This is this is mutual aid, I think, at its finest.
I was just noticing, I just mentioned it, because I don't really want to give to for you to take on more work, busy work, Marco, but the spreadsheet version of the old submissions, I find extremely difficult to work with, because for some reason I can't control the column widths or the size of the characters, and it doesn't fill up the screen. And so I have to slide it across, and then I lose the name of the person when I slide it across to look at the reviewers, and it's just a nightmare to work with. Whereas the new form, of course, works much better. So
right.
It would be nice to move the stuff from the spreadsheet over to the new form, but that's busy work.
You know? There's probably an import function. Yeah. I can look into it.
Yeah.
Because I've been in touch with all these people. I've emailed them, letting them know that we're still considering their work. But if everything is already rated, or almost, we could only enter the pieces that, have a chance.
Yeah.
Do you want, that's another question. Speaking of work that needs doing, do you want me to start writing nice rejection notes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's great.
I'll do them. I'll start writing things for the ones that are clearly no's. And I guess I'll set myself up with an email and just start sending them.
So you've done this before, Mary?
Well, I've gotten a lot of them.
Ah.
So, you're a student of the genre.
I was, yeah. I'll run the first few by you guys, maybe, just to make sure that, like, the tone is something good. It would
help me understand what goes into one. So
at minimum, there's the kind of form boilerplate one that just says, thank you so much for sending it. Received a lot of submissions. Unfortunately, yours isn't right for us at this time. I wish you the best submitting it elsewhere. Like, that's the one you put no effort into it. And then if I can keep up the energy, maybe I'll get frustrated and stop. But I might say something like, our reviewers really appreciated your imagery, but, maybe I'll just say something positive mostly. Mostly, we appreciated the imagery in this, but overall, it just wasn't right for us. Something like that. Is that maybe the tone we want to take? Yeah? It's not really our job to make people feel bad about their writing. And they haven't necessarily asked us for constructive criticism. If I can think of something nice to say, I'll say it. If not,
there's something in the comments too. Jeffrey's left some comments.
But I didn't leave any comments for them. I left comments for each other.
Yeah. I'll read them and I'll just distill it, like at any point if any of us said something nice. I'll put it in.
Most of my negative comments have to do with the level of the language.
Yeah, I won't be telling them that.
To be, not up to snuff, but tricky to say.
I'll write up a boilerplate with just like a and bracket out, like it'll have all the what the basic text will be, and then a little line where if there's anything nice to say, we can put it in.
Right.
And I'll run that text by you all, and you guys can tell me if you think it's a good, like you want to be professional and courteous and not destroy people's self-esteem. Mm-hmm. So you can tell me if I'm hitting that note and then we can just send that.
Yeah, that sounds good. I mean, it's laudable no matter what, like to be submitting work and, to take the chance and to believe in yourself enough and to be doing something creative rather than destructive. I mean, there's, even just in the exercise of it, whether or not you've written something that other people deem is worth publishing, there's something to be affirmed in that. And so just that is a baseline, like affirmation, like, we appreciate you doing this. And, we see that, we see you in some way for who you are, or at least for like some essence of you. And it's not right for us or it's not good enough, but in so many words,
yeah.
Not right. Yeah. Not right for us.
That's the one that I hear most. And I really do. I sincerely believe that submitting places and getting rejected has been part of my journey as a writer. And like, I hear that from most writers that it's just like, it's part of growth, even if, so I think that like these people should feel good about themselves for having sent stuff out. And and
they didn't self-reject.
Exactly. So. Yeah. I'll get started on that.
Okay. That sounds good.
Anything else? Now I'm curious, Jeffrey, which ones you liked of the ones that have come in so far?
We all need work except for one. I only looked at two.
Yeah.
Ahern, which I didn't like, and the Spanish one.
Is that the barber one?
Yeah, which I kind of liked, but I have a comment about it that I think.
That was the one that I felt really charmed by, actually. It was just a very witty.
Gave it good.
Yeah.
And I thought slightly under good, slightly, if you like. So I put it needs work, but I have a comment on why I think it needs work.
Yeah, that might be one that we could work with the author on. Because I liked it too. It kind of won me over. It's very simple.
It is very simple.
But like I said, it kind of charmed me. Yeah. And it's a story. That's like the first story that I've felt that good about, actually.
Yeah. You said that you didn't like the story so much. So when I read that, I thought,
Which one?
This one. You said, you said there's several of the other stories in the first batch you didn't really like. I haven't read them all, so.
Yeah, I feel like a story, it's just longer, and so you need to work hard to keep my attention on it. I don't know. Maybe I just like poetry. That's fine. Oh, well.
Okay.
Sorry, Marco.
That's okay. I was curious, when I saw, are you getting aura off a piece too? I don't know if you've experienced this, but even with that, reading the words in detail, just reading a couple of lines, you get like a feeling for how the author constructs sentences and like what their mind is, how their mind works. So this is the one I thought maybe has potential.
The barber one?
The spiritual barber one, yeah.
I thought that the sort of cover letters were extremely terse. And I kind of want a little bit more information than just here's my submission dot.
Oh, really? I mean,
that's not a cover letter in my view.
That's the cover letter I always send when I submit. And I figure, thank you very much for your consideration.
Yeah, I suppose.
Thank you for considering this. Yep, that's what I send. What do you want to know in a cover letter?
I just want to know a little bit about the person and why, where this text comes from, in a sense. But I suppose that's maybe asking for too much. But
I guess my philosophy as a writer, so I don't know what the editors who get mine think of it, is that the piece has to stand alone. And if I can't, if I can't win them over with the piece itself, then nothing I put in the cover letter.
I get that. I get help. It's just that I don't know. I need to articulate what I think, but
you also have relatively big projects that need potentially like some context to understand. So not everybody has a big project.
No, true.
And we have gotten, the cases where we've gotten more extensive cover letters, it's usually because the author has some kind of big thing going on, and they're trying to explain that thing. But I have been duped by more than one cover letter into believing that thing was more special or more further along than it was represented to be in the letter. So there is, I think, something to be said for letting the work speak for itself, because even a fragment of a larger work, if it can't reflect, the qualities of that work, if you need to read the whole thing to appreciate the fragment, then there could be some kind of gap, there between vision and actuality.
Yeah.
I think it's just because I'm a neophyte editor here. And
No, I think, do you know what would be cool though? Is that when they get published, when we choose to publish something, It would be nice to have a little text like that to accompany the piece and maybe come after it, like on the website itself.
Like even a small little bio, just to get, I mean, again, I understand the thing about the text needing to stand on its own, but if it's submitted by a non-Anglophone, it has to be good, but I often find small errors in the English, which suggest to me that the writer is not Anglophone.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's good to know. I think, yeah, if there's things that I need to know before I read it, that definitely does belong in a cover letter. If something is also has very specialized knowledge, I don't know. If I was submitting something that was set on a boat in the Arctic, I think I put in my cover letter, I have experience working on boats in the Arctic. Like when it's something, when I feel like I need to show my credentials to allow me to write about a thing,
then
that goes in my cover letter for sure.
There's some people for whom as well, their persona is part of their literary performance, and the cover letter becomes a kind of extension of the piece. I think Brian George was like this. When he submitted his work, it came with like a 2-page cover letter and about 7 or 8 different pieces. And it was almost over the top at first. It took me a while to just get enough distance from it to see what the shape of it was. But I came to realize that cover letter was not other than the writing in a way that it was almost a kind of harbinger, I'm not coming to the word here, but sort of like announcement of the writing to come. Like it was, so that's a different case. That's this kind of special case, I think, because not many writers like treat all of their textual output as sort of like a literary act. Like, whereas I think there's an ethos, and this is probably more found in more classical, writing culture, that like your correspondence is literary. And the writing itself is an expression, but they're all like different genres of your overall kind of literary output. So sometimes a cover letter that is like well considered and written and is like itself a literary act, I think could become effective in working with the text, like complementing it in a way. But if it's just a typical, professional bio, then it's better not to, it'd be better to let the text stand on its own, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I'll quell my...
Your curiosity.
Do you have feedback on that, or are you particularly?
No.
All right. So, again, I mean, that's also to say that the cover letter can be very misleading, because it can produce a persona that is not equivalent to
this editing process. I mean, I'm sort of saying something kind of obvious maybe, but I've been trying to say it for a while, I think, but you read the text and you like it or you don't, or maybe you kind of half like it or half don't. and the process of editing seems to be at least as much a self-inspection as it is a look at the work, because it has to do with the way you emotionally react to, emotionally and aesthetically react to the text. And so you sort of have to understand yourself and your own reactions to work out whether or not you think the work is good. So it's very much more introspective than I expected as a process.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I agree.
Well, and you're also dealing with another human soul too. And there's something, even in work that isn't, let's say, like well-developed or as sophisticated in its use of English as other work, there's still a soul there that like is trying to say something or has something to work out or work through. And even like I've found that sometimes pieces don't interest me, but the person interests me. Mm-hmm. Or like the piece is maybe not literarily, you know, up to the standards of you know, other published work, but the person seems like an interesting person to me. And I wonder, like, I wonder what could come, you know, what's there, what could come out of that relationship, or maybe they have other work that's gonna, you know, it's not just about their work. It's also about, you know, who they are. And to me, just that's kind of the interesting thing. Like these pieces are like outgrowths of us, and they kind of disclose aspects of personality that can be just interesting, like on their own right. One example of that for me is one of the first pieces on that spreadsheet, Bouncy Ikagawa, I think is her name. And I didn't add I think I added myself as a reviewer, but I haven't gotten back to it. And there was just something interesting about like her, even though she's definitely not a native English speaker, like there's obvious grammatical mistakes and things like that. There's something interesting about her point of view. And I wanted to see if I could sort of bring out what that is. And I don't know if that really takes the shape of the specific piece that she submitted. She ended up sending something else, which wasn't part of her original submission. I think it was like Diary of a Married Woman. I think it was called something like that. But it was almost like in the old days of blogs where you could find interesting people who were just writing about their lives, but doing so in this like very on.
It felt like a log rather than like a journal.
Yeah,
that's a poem, right?
But it wasn't social media. Like it was just pure self-expression. It was different.
I haven't got to it yet, but now I really want to read it. I was moving up from the bottom.
And it was, you know, very touching stuff that she was writing, but it wasn't literary quality. That's the catch. So I sort of felt like, oh, I would like to publish this, but not in the form that it's presented, you know?
Benny. What's our policy on, I haven't read this yet, so I don't know if it's appropriate to this situation, but we will perhaps sometimes get back to people and say revise and resubmit, right? Like we're not committing to accepting this, but if you address these issues that we identify and send it to us again, we'd like to take another look at it.
Man, that sounds good to me. As far as a policy, I don't know. I mean, I imagine that depending on the timing, it may or may not, it may disqualify the piece from the current publishing cycle.
Yeah.
But I am wondering, like, whether... I don't know. I'm not wondering how this is going to play out, like whether we'll be able to publish everything this fall or we'll have some things for the spring or we'll need another submissions window later in the year. I'm not sure. It depends on how much work we get in and also our own publications that are already in process. So I've been internally at least trying to keep somewhat noncommittal as to, I mean, you know, like focusing on the fall, mm-hmm. October to December, but then leaving it open that if something doesn't fit this fall and it needs more time to develop, like a piece like that comes back after being revised, mm-hmm. That potentially we could start scheduling stuff for the spring.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that would be cool.
Yeah, that's fine.
Well, I'll definitely go read it now. I've been intrigued.
Yeah, so she's interesting to me. Kevin Guihan is somebody, he's the next on the list, and I almost have the opposite experience with him. Like, as a person, just as a persona, I feel like I've gotten a sort of repulsion reaction, partly because he kind of, he submitted and then like almost five times more, he kept like kind of checking in and almost in this sort of obsessive compulsive, like a little bit like not healthy way. And I finally had to tell him to just stop and that, you know, to leave me alone. Like, it wasn't me personally, but like to back off. On the other hand, and then the work itself, what of it that I read really bespoke of kind of a very deep depressive kind of person. Mm-hmm. Where it's like borderline, there is a poetry here, there's a certain kind of aesthetic, and at the same time this person's like maybe clinically not unwell, and it bleeds from like literature into more therapy or something. And so I was kind of feeling a bit cautious, I guess, around him. George, on the same list, George Ivanov Vasilev is another, like, an interesting person. But I don't know if his work is really the right fit.
Yeah, I haven't read yet. I did read Kevin Guillen.
I found it
a bit cliche.
On George, you've got Needs Work, so it looks like you did.
Oh, I did?
Yeah.
George Ivanov Vasilev? Oh, he's in there twice. I saw a blank line.
Okay.
Got it. Then what did I say? I really, whenever he was just talking about who he was meeting on the street, I thought, what interesting people, interesting ideas about the rock doves and so on. And then he'd kind of go into abstract about like how love is going to save us. And I wanted to get back to the interesting people he was meeting on the street. That's an interesting
comment. Yeah.
So.
And we both liked was, or is this Falconer, James Falconer? No, mm-hmm. That was Marco. You and I both liked it.
Yeah. Okay, the Father Spirit. He sent that to me shortly after I posted the eulogy that I wrote for my dad. And it was touching to me.
Is it the, I'm just trying to remember what it was about based on my comment. What was it about? he was sort of walking around his room and looking at things, right?
He was reflecting, I think, on a picture of his father.
Yeah.
Okay. And then he also had a son. So it was a sort of generational meditation or contemplation. Yeah. But it was very, very beautiful, sensitive language, I thought. And it felt like it was coming from a deep place.
Yeah. It lost me a little, but I think it's more that maybe now hearing you talk, it's maybe more my personality that kind of meditative stuff that's not anchored in narrative does tend to lose me. Mm. But it could be very valuable for another reader. And I agree the quality of writing was good on that. That one got two goods, eh? That should move on to our list of potentially pursuing James Falconer.
Yeah, I'd say maybe if we worked through this and had a couple of, like, anything that's good, good, or good, excellent, could
could move over, and then
over. Yeah,
we would discuss the ones that have one good and one needs work.
Yeah. So, for instance, is this the one? This is almost good enough. Yes. Yeah. I was a bit disappointed with Christian Thomas because it started out so strong. And he's the one where it's the railroad man and it's an afterlife experience. And he looks back on a time that he was on a trip traveling out west to survey the route of the railroad. And then he runs into an indigenous tribe of people who are kind of able to spiritually, like their native guide has the power to something about dreams. And then the ending did fizzle a little, like I was not sure how it was supposed to land, but it also just worried me that he had these indigenous characters show up who didn't seem to have much motivation or purpose of their own, but like taught him how to walk in dreams. This kind of seemed like the magical indigenous person cliche, which was unfortunate because the whole first part of that story actually just charmed me so much. I read it and I was quite into it. But you gotta stick the landing.
Well, yeah, that might be good feedback to give.
But you, because on the spreadsheet, you didn't put down anything, so.
Oh, I probably not. I read it after you did, so I've added to it. And what I did, there's only one place, since there was only one cell for internal notes, I just typed in afterward.
I'm not going to click there because I lose the rest of the spreadsheet when I do that.
So. Right, okay, so I'll read my comment aloud. I said, the storytelling is skilled throughout. I feel a pretty intense discomfort with the magical indigenous person trope. Doesn't seem to reflect at all on the dispossession of indigenous peoples, which the building railroads led to. I was baffled by what the ending was meant to say. That was my comment. So.
I was listening to this very, very interesting conversation. So in Canada, there's a competition everywhere that every year on books, the CBC organizes a
Canada Reads.
Yeah, a competition on picking the best book for Canadians to read in a year. And it doesn't have to be recent books. It can be any book over the cycle, whatever. Although it often is more recent books.
They get four celebrities to choose their favorite books, and then they have like televised debates, and they go on the radio and so on, and one of the books wins. And then it's like a book club for the whole country. And we're all supposed to read it.
And there's a discussion online right now about one of the books that's under discussion, called From the Ashes, which is about, it's a memoir written by a Métis guy who went through some very, very difficult, he was homeless and he went through some very difficult experiences. And so the book is sort of proclaimed as being this wonderful and very deep transformative experiences. But the problem is that the indigenous person on the committee who is discussing it says that this is the kind of experience that we indigenous people have all gone through and have no interest in reading it in an external version because it triggers too much. And so it was this whole discussion about, you know, whether a book that's supposed to appeal to the Canadian people can exclude appealing to a group like Indigenous peoples, which of course it can't. but you know, there were some sort of strong opinions on both sides about this. So it was a very interesting discussion, but it's the kind of discussion that I think absolutely has to happen in the literary world about these kinds of things, you know.
So. Just may I ask, like, and what's the context for that, like, national reading sort of discussion? I mean, I can't imagine that happening in the United States anymore. We're too fragmented.
Well, you're.
I mean, the closest thing is like Oprah. I think like Oprah's book club might be the closest thing in the U.S.
Ours is run by Canadian CBC, like Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, which the closest equivalent in the States is probably NPR.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, it's our news radio. It's
sure,
our
like
top
the BBC.
Mm-hmm, exactly. They're the BBC of Canada. And they're government funded, and they are always getting accused of having a liberal bias. And but they
as NPR and as the BBC are. Yeah.
But they do these kinds of cultural events. They also run a write. They do this is called Canada Reads. They do a Canada Writes writing contest, and they do a lot of. Yeah, they're very central in Canadian culture. They have a whole. There's a television channel, and there's lots of TV shows mm-hmm. that are made by CBC. Like you've probably heard of Schitt's Creek and Kim's Convenience.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Like sitcoms like that. Those are Canadian ones, and they're usually produced by CBC. So they have a kind of television production arm as well.
Sure, like PBS in the US.
Yeah, that's like, it. That's also a good analogy. Yeah.
But I think in the US, at least PBS, NBC, not NBC, PBS and NPR tend to be more associated, like they have a very strong political kind of association. Like, it's become that way. In the past, maybe a little bit less so, but it's often more like liberal, progressive, suburban, you know. So it's cool actually to hear that you could have a national discussion about, you know, books that would be kind of, you know, salubrious for the population in general, you know, to read, like the sense of a common, you know, culture. I think is you know, venerable in certain ways, and kind of it's dismaying that it's so flown apart and so disastrously just down south.
They're always threatening to yank the funding on CBC, and then like they're always at risk of it. Mm. And the whole conservative, like they're supposed to stay politically neutral, and they try to give like neutral coverage of elections and so on. But people in Alberta, the conservative bastion, are often going onto Twitter to complain about how it's a liberal mouthpiece and should be defunded. So we're not, just if it makes you feel better, we're not totally clear of the controversy either.
Sure, I'm sure. Okay, so we've kind of like slipped into discussing these pieces.
Yeah, which is good, which is fun. Did we want to keep going, or do we want to wrap up early?
Well, I'm happy to listen. I feel a little bit too distant from the pieces right now to discuss them seriously. I'm just sharing like some impressions I've had that have stuck, you know, for a few months. But if you and Jeffrey, who have read most of them, have any comments, I'd love to hear them.
I'm just reminding myself, I wrote down that I loved Pacte de Carlos, but I think I read it about a month ago, so I'm trying to remind myself of why I liked it so much. I think it was just like, it just hit all my good poetry buttons. Like I like things that have a little bit of, that poetry that has a little bit of narrative to it. They were kind of like perfect little stories with twist endings.
Two. I didn't read that one, right?
No, it's you were working down from the top, and it was yeah. It's one.
No,
of
the, I, yeah, from the other end. Yeah, so yeah.
So
I'll put it down on my list of things to read, maybe.
Yeah, it'd be worth it, I think.
Same here.
A guy that just lives in Florida, he says in his bio, and I got a real sense of place from it, like of a, in some ways, just of an ordinary life described in a, with unusual and striking images. So, yeah, that was the one I'd advocate for. And you and I think we're both, Jeffrey, Diana Thorson, she only sent one poem.
Yeah, I noticed that, yeah.
And my comment on it, like I almost, it's a single poem with a bunch of stanzas that are between one and three lines. And it's almost like each stanza is a different image. And so if there was one thing that kind of bounced me out of the poem, it was that every time there was a stanza break, it was a different image, and I didn't have they didn't necessarily feel unified in a single...
I wanted a bit more elaboration on it, yeah.
Yeah, like it felt like it was just kept glancing off images. And then now that I'm talking aloud, isn't there, the ghazal is like a form where there isn't supposed to be an obvious connection between your stanzas, but there's supposed to be a thematic link. So maybe it's...
Did you call it the ghazal?
Yeah, is that, I'm probably not pronouncing it right.
I'm not sure.
Ghazal.
Because my comment was that I kind of like to see more poems by the same person, but actually
that might be a good feedback to send back, because if this feeling of disconnection that I'm getting from this poem I might not get from her other poems, and there might be like if, and she's clearly got chops of some kind, so she's got skills, like she's got cool images in her head. And I wonder if there would be another one that would just click for me a little better. So
I noticed you reviewed, Slebo on this run, because I read his, the one of the ones that was, that you accepted in the past, Marco, which I loved, so.
And I had trouble with this story. I wonder if I got too impatient, though, like hearing that you guys liked his previous work. I felt like I was at page 7 and I didn't know much about the main character yet. Like anything about the main character yet was my feeling.
Read it this round, so.
Yeah. Well, read it and see what you think.
Yeah.
He kind of, it starts, he's in a conversation on the phone, and then he decides to go to he goes to like a manor for the weekend, or something mysterious is going to happen. But it was almost like for me, the main character was a bit of a blank at the middle of the story.
One was very tangential, right? It sort of slides from one thing to another and never quite culminates in anything. So kind of worked, but yeah, I don't know. I could see why somebody might not like it as much, so.
Yeah. Sometimes I just slide off things. What else did I give a good to? Oh, one of the earliest ones I gave a good to was, let's see if I can find it again. And I know you won't have gotten to it yet, Jeffrey, because it was the very first one I read. Yoav ben Yosef. I think I wrote that I was charmed by it. I guess I keep saying that, but this is a quality I appreciate in writing, where I just feel like it's just kind of seduced me and pulled me in. Except it started out with a kind of implausible premise.
So what's the name?
Yoav ben Yosef.
Okay.
Yeah. I gave it a good, and, oh, no, wait, sorry, that, is that right? He goes down to get a UPS delivery or something, and the guy says, you have to get into this truck I've mixed up my comments and written some things in the wrong place. You have to get into my truck in order to get the thing, and then offers him a choice, either peace in the Middle East or a large quantity of money. And the whole story is just him being driven around by this UPS driver, trying to decide, which one he's going to do. I liked the voice, and it was just kind of fun. But I couldn't, like, my brain kept hitting this wall where I was like, why would you get in a truck with a UPS driver? Seems like a good way to get kidnapped and killed. I think male writers maybe don't think of that as much.
UPS.
Is that, yeah. So, no, he was so funny. And it was clear, I made a note that I thought that the narrator might be kind of neurodivergent in some way. Like, I don't like to diagnose people in fiction, but some kind of like attention deficit disorder or something going on that was making things, that was just made his brain like a little quirky and different. And I thought that was captured nicely.
Well, I'll read through some of these ones, the ones that you've marked good, and see what I think.
Yeah. This is, I like our minimum two reviewers system. I think it's a good check and balance kind of thing.
Any others you want to comment on?
The next one down on the list you had marked as good. You.
What's the name?
Michelle or Michael or something. Fiorentino, Florent, I don't know. What
Michael Fiorito, okay. I said it was surprisingly playful. Oh, it's like about how Julian Huxley is actually... how Aldous Huxley, like after his death, actually inhabits the Beatles or something, and like his spirit goes into the Beatles and changes their music. I mean, my hesitation about it is it's a bit of like fan, kind of like someone who's a big fan of Aldous Huxley and a big fan of the Beatles has written their little mashup about how much they love both of them. But it was playful. It's a good first line too, actually. When the Beatles recorded songs for the debut album, I was slowly dying of tongue cancer. And then it takes you through the discography of the Beatles, showing how Aldous Huxley influenced them all. Yeah, I don't know. I gave it a good and not an excellent. It wasn't next level for me, but I had fun reading it.
It's kind of like in the genre of like a critical appreciation, like that.
Ooh, yeah.
It's about culture, and it's
And pop culture, literally.
Pop culture.
Yeah.
Like they wrote a review, but they gave it this playful fictional frame. But it is essentially a review.
What I think it probably doesn't have is like like kind of urgency.
Yeah.
Like there's this sense that there's an urgency in the world right now. Mm-hmm. And I love the Beatles, and hearing the Beatles for the first time when I like, the revelation of the Beatles when I was a teenager, and I only thought of them as some pop group from the past. And then I realized how deep and creative and like fun they were, and like why they were the most popular band of all time, arguably. Like I could appreciate a piece like this, but I'm not sure that it's like right for the times, that's all.
Yeah.
Like in times of health.
They were very progressive in the world stage in terms of the way they thought about, the way they wrote about the world. I mean, Let It Be and Imagine. And I mean, you know, these are not exactly mild songs about the world.
Yeah. We're in a, it's interesting. I feel like we're in a, like a related, but a different moment.
Mm, I understand. Yeah.
It's like it's a period of like cultural upheaval and cultural revolution in a similar to the 60s. But and you know, certainly people were having similar thoughts back then, and even a lot of the political arguments are basically the same. But I don't know, something seems, it seems like the stakes are even higher now. And like with the way the technology, what we didn't have in the 60s was the internet. And the way that that has opened up our perspective on things, or closed it down in other respects, I think has to be grappled with. Like, this feels a little bit too nostalgic.
I thought of another one that I quite liked, is Susan Evans. And she sent a single poem, and I think I gave it a good, and I made a slightly negative comment on it. But I think now looking at it again, I think I was a bit too harsh.
Susan Evans?
Yeah, Susan Evans.
Why am I not seeing her? Oh, no, here she is. Yeah.
Oh, she's in the E's, that's why I didn't.
Yeah.
Wow, that's a nice comment that you made.
Yeah, I think I wished I had a little more insight into her adult self, but I don't like necessarily need it.
This is a solid, good poem.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's solid. It does what a poem should do.
Yeah, I mean, she's obviously like a poet. You know, she knows what she's doing. She's crafted this. I mean, you can sort of relate to it and or like it or not, but I like it. The raging in my heart, the bear in my heart, I carry home. It's and the green socks. That's such a Lucy the Nun with the green socks. That's a really cool way to start. Yeah, saw me hugging the oak tree.
Like a domestic image of folding socks and laundry and like all those images, and then a raging bear, like that is a that's a cool juxtaposition.
I like this.
I can't remember, is there a way I can get to the I can't get it from the spreadsheet, right? I have to go to the page and I've lost track of the page.
Oh, sorry. So those are all in the folder, the submissions folder in the cloud, and each author has their own folder in the submissions folder. So that one is here.
Yeah, I just have to figure it out how to get it out of here.
There's a link in the post that's called Submission Salvage. That's how I usually get in. I go back and read Marco's old post and follow the link.
Oh, I mean, yeah, okay. Yeah, I understand. I got you. Yeah. That's the way to do it. The Savage Submissions, right, one?
Yeah, that's the one.
It's actually, I pronounce it Submission Salvage.
Yeah, well, that's the way I remember it. Sorry.
The submission salvages. That's Eliot. That's from the quartets. The dry salvages.
Yeah, so I think of them as salvages, but.
Is it spelled salvage with an E?
No, it's with an A.
That's a different word.
It's almost like savages with an L.
Yeah, it's salvages, yeah.
Okay. But he adds a note in the text that salvages should be pronounced salvages for the sake of the poem.
Oh, well. Elliot. Oh, well, you know what, talking to you guys has made me feel kind of excited about the submissions we've already got too.
Like, there's a few good ones.
There's a few gems.
And I think I would not feel at all uncomfortable with publishing some of these. I feel good about them. Mm-hmm. And even like depending on what comes in, some things, you know, like there's this, I think this fall has this feeling of urgency. I hope the fever will break a little bit mm-hmm. after this fall and sort of open up in 2021. And I'm sure there will be more calamities, but it seems like there's a kind of this point of it, and perhaps it's because of the election in the United States, and certainly it's because of the virus. But I hope that will pass through this like acute phase and move into a phase where there isn't as much, and there's more spaciousness maybe around the state of the world. And I think that opens the landscape up for different kinds of literature that doesn't have to be about. I think our attention is like naturally drawn to what's going on and how to like this response that I think is called for and we've discussed, but I think beyond that or through that passage, there's maybe another field of where different things become possible. And we've sort of gone through the initiation into this like dark age, and then we can just sort of revel, be in the darkness and create from there. I hope that.
Yeah, kind of. It's what a crucible is, right? It's the place where everything is mixed up and something comes out of it, right? So it feels horrible, but it's the place where the action happens.
Yeah.
That's well put. Plans over the next 2 weeks? I think there'll maybe be more technical things that crop up, but mostly we just want to be reading stuff. Well, next week, in 2 weeks, will it just basically be making decisions about pieces?
I think so. I think we should do that.
Cool. But
I think it'll be 3 weeks because there's a fifth Wednesday coming up. We have this scheduled on the second and fourth Wednesdays. So.
Okay. Oh, I better note that or else I'll just lose track. So.
And really, there'll be two more meetings, I think.
Before the end of the...
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so the next one's on the 12th. Good.
Yeah, and that would make the last one be after the end of the submission. 12th, 14th, 16th. Mm-hmm. It's after the end of the submissions.
The day after.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Then we'll have all the submissions that there are to have.
So if we could get the blogs up this week, or at least two of them, as we said, mm-hmm. and then as I'll say, I'll go through the list of your things that you guys said good and I haven't commented on, and I'll have a look at them.
Cool. Yeah, and I'll do the same for the last ones I've got. And we'll get more new ones.
That's not because I was thinking, I need to go through the whole slew of them. So this is better because finding the time to go through all of them is a bit of a challenge right now. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll start getting my head into them as well. This has been a good kind of transitional meeting for me. So I've enjoyed hearing your thoughts on the pieces and like that you're getting into them and. It's cool.
I was wondering, I'm just thinking aloud and you can shoot me down right away and say, no, we're not going to do that because it would involve work. So, I'm just thinking because about these submissions and feedback and all the rest of it, if we had a kind of template where you could check off items on the template, like, I don't know. quality of the language, overall scope, or, you know,
I hear what you're saying. Kind of different axes.
We could then turn that around to the applicants and say, this is what our editors checked off on their checklist about your piece. And it would be a kind of feedback in a technical way, you know?
I don't think I'd use it as an editor, because I don't think I separate those things in my mind very clearly.
Even if you were trying to give feedback as a way of giving feedback, you know?
I mean, I'm always just very careful giving feedback. I'd only give negative feedback if people ask to get negative feedback. And if they don't ask, then I just try to think of something nice to say. And so I'm going to assume that most of the people who send these things in just want to hear, they either want to hear they're accepted, or they just want to hear something no, but a nice no. That's
not my.
I don't want to send them like a rating, you know, or a grade.
Okay.
They're not my students, you know? That's not my job, and that's not our relationship.
That's good feedback. I had a similar thought earlier too, and maybe like there's some kind of, you know, if you had like a rubric of qualities or something that, you know, and then, but the form would allow you to sort of select those. And I think, yeah, we'd have to think about that. And it might not be appropriate to share with the writer. It could be like an internal tool that we use. But I think we'd have to think about that, like what that would really entail. Because would it artificially kind of limit the scope of, would it start to influence how we read pieces? Like if we have a kind of limited set of criteria that we're looking at, and we begin reading a piece to see if it matches like complexity of language, depth of characterization, narrative flow, like whatever those are. And then they'd have to be sort of tailored to the genre, but then we'd have to line up the genre. We'd have to peg a piece as being in one genre or another, which they often are, but not always. And even if something is in one genre, it may be trying to do something that doesn't quite match up with your schema. But that's not to say they couldn't be useful, because I mean, it's sort of a question of like how evaluation, like how do we evaluate, and like what structures do we bring, like cognitively, or, you know, in our judgment, in our sense of judgment to, you know, to a work that we encounter. I came across a piece, like it was a presentation by a fellow named Zach Stein. He came out of Harvard education, and he's been mentioned on the forum a few times. I've met him a couple times. But he really delved into the question of evaluation in an educational setting. Like, how do we evaluate a student in ways that are not reduct, like the ways that are don't flatten, are not reduct, non-reductive, you know, but still provide like valuable information, like that could be sort of systematized to some degree. Of course, like you can't exclude the qualitative from the quantitative, like they have to work together. But I think what I got out of that presentation with Zach is that there are ways that are, I think, more sensitive to think about like creating evaluative criteria, and that could be more useful, because in a way, like they give you a visualization, you know, they give you sort of a frame of reference for how and why judgments are made that take it out of the purely subjective, like the purely like personal reaction that sometimes is difficult to articulate. On the other hand, I think they also may dim the singularity. They may kind of obscure the singularity of a piece to the extent that that's there. And, you know, like judgment, I think, comes down in some fundamental way to that singularity experience of what do you, how do you feel about it? What's your personal gut reaction to it? And then we craft a kind of narrative around that for ourselves or for, you know, other editors or for the author. But it doesn't necessarily come from like matching criteria to like qualities exhibited by the aesthetic object. I think it's a deep, I think it's a interesting consideration, like how we come to these judgments.
This is reminding me of a conversation I had with a friend who's worked as a slush reader, I forget, for some literary journal, and I don't know what. And she said one of the things she learned is that there's a lot of competent writing out there. There's just masses of stuff that people send in that's very competent, like they just clearly know how to write. And there's not that much like amazing, excellent stuff. Like there's a level above competent, and that it made her realize that it's like hard to get to that level above competent, and not many people do it. And there's just a mass of stuff that is like fine and well-written and like contains no major blunders. And that it was a little bit daunting for her because like we all know how to write. Like if we work hard enough, we can all write competently, but how do you ensure that you're going to write inspired stuff? And I think that that if we try to, I wonder like a little bit what you're talking about, if we break down all the components and so on, we'd probably end up giving a pretty high ranking to competent writing. But that level that's inspired, I don't think we know how to mark it.
It's the singular part, right? So
yeah.
It's a good point. Anyway, it's worth thinking about. So
yeah.
I'd be curious, Jeffrey, if you developed, because I think you've thought pretty deeply about it. I'd love to see your like personal tool. If you ended up doing a sheet like this to help yourself with the, if you beta tested a system like that and found it helpful for your evaluation, I think I could learn a lot from seeing how you used it. I'd be curious. I think it would tell me something about you as well. Right.
I'll think about it.
Okay.
Of course, I've been through this whole critiquing exercise this last few weeks, so
Yeah, you're getting used to being critiqued.
Yeah, and critiquing other people. So.
Okay, I better move on. It's getting late.
Yeah, I have to get some critiques in submitted tonight. So yeah.
Speaking of, and I have to go have supper. This has been a really great meeting.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to see you both, and see you again next week. Yeah. Oh no! Sorry, 2 weeks.
You'll see me next week.
No, actually, in 2 weeks because it's a fifth. It's the other fifth Wednesday thing.
Oh, okay. So yeah. help me out. So there's nothing going on the 29th.
Writing group.
Oh, you know this is good because Zach said he wasn't going to be able to get something ready for this Wednesday, but I could, and I didn't have anything ready. but if I have
I'll definitely have something.
Yeah.
Yeah. And John may join us again. I don't think he'll have anything necessarily, but whatever you have, I'd love to see it. If you have a revision of your other piece, okay. Well, that may take longer. But if you have something else, I'd be happy to read it. And definitely Zach's anything from Zach as well.
Yeah. Well, we got a whole extra week, so anything's possible. At least for a week, anything's possible. Okay.
Okay, see you guys.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.